return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Halfway through the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Dave Minuke. Drew Mandel is off this week. He'll be back next week. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by Eric Carmery, Manitoba Moose goaltender and Winnipeg Jets prospect on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Eric, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How about yourself?
We're doing really well, It's a beautiful day outside, and we're very happy to have you on the show this morning. I guess just take us back, Eric, the last 4 days being recalled by the Winnipeg Jets and then starting your first NHL game and picking up your first NHL victory on Thursday night against Columbus.
It's a bit of a whirlwind. I mean, it was pretty unbelievable. I was playing against Grand Rapids here, had a pretty good win. We beat them 2-1. Then I was out for dinner with my family. They came into town, my sister and her three kids were here, and it was the first time they saw me play actually in Winnipeg, so I was excited to see them. And then I got a call from Zinger, told me to be at the airport the next day, 6 a.m., and that was kind of a whirlwind. Told me I was starting against Columbus. Instantly called my family, got on a plane the next day, flew to Columbus, and the rest was history, really.
Eric, how important was it for you to have your family there? I mean, TSN must have shown them about 100 times throughout the game, and your parents were nervous up until that last second. But what did it mean to you to have them there in the crowd watching your first NHL game?
I mean, that was pretty unbelievable to have them there as a special moment for myself. I mean, they've supported me my whole way up, and I can't thank them enough for how much they've done to me. I know for a fact that I would not be here without them.
We're joined by Eric Carmery on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Eric, I want to go back to after the game on Thursday night. How hard was it to give that post-game scrum with that fighter helmet on?
It was pretty cool. I mean, it's definitely a little harder to answer the question. You got that thing dangling in your mouth a little bit, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, the guy, Storby, made me put it on, and it was pretty exciting. I mean, I was just really happy that they gave me that thing. It was a huge honor. I'm just so excited still about that, and I'm guessing the interview got a lot of likes I saw, so I'm happy about that.
Eric, that was your 100th professional hockey game, a memorable one, of course, but can you believe you've already achieved 100 professional hockey games in your career?
I mean, that in itself is something really special to myself. I'm just really happy that the organization's had that much trust in me, and not a lot of 21-year-old goalies get to play a lot of 100 pro games this early in their career, and I'm just really excited about that, and just happy with the amount of development I could have had in those 100 games.
You know, Dave mentioned the 100 games there. You've played two full seasons with the Moose now, and you've now got the one NHL game with the Jets. What area of your game do you think has improved the most in these 2 years?
I think for myself, just about getting experience. I mean, the more experience you have, the more awareness you have for the game, the better reads you have, the more understanding of the depth. Just for yourself, it's about getting a much different experience as you can. And the more games you play, the more different scenarios you see, the more things you can read off of, and it helps your whole game in general.
Eric, what has Moose goalie coach Rick St. Croix meant for your development?
Oh, he's been unbelievable. I mean, he's got so much knowledge to himself. He's been around the game for a long time. He's played in the National Hockey League. He's been something that's helped me out so much in my career. He's been one of the main pieces of helping me get better every single day and every single year I've been here.
We're joined by Eric Carmery, Manitoba Moose goaltender and Winnipeg Jets prospect on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Eric, how happy were you last night? Brendan Kitchen scores his first goal of the year, and the Moose pick up a very big overtime victory over the Tucson Roadrunners.
I mean, that was a big win for us. I mean, I was really excited for him. I thought we played a pretty solid game. We generated some scoring chances, and I'm just happy for him. He's my roommate back home, so we live together here, and he's just really excited for himself. I mean, he's worked so hard for that goal, and he's been an unbelievable player. He's had a bit of a unfortunate season by not scoring, but he's still been a good player, great defensively, and really happy to see him get rewarded with that goal.
Eric, I was in the broadcast booth with Mitch last night, and we were watching that game from up atop, and, you know, I couldn't help but notice that reaction was different than a normal one. Like, it wasn't just we won a regular season game in OT. That was – you guys almost put Brendan Kitchen through the through the official's door. I mean, that was clearly a team that really cared about that player getting that goal.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he deserves it more than anybody else in this organization. He's an unbelievable hard worker. he's worked so hard his whole career. I mean, every single day in practice, he gets out there early, stays in the gym long. He deserves it more than, I mean, just unbelievable to see the amount of work he puts in and how much, not only that work, but he does so much stuff for the community. He's such a great person all around. And he has been playing great for us all season long. Just the production hasn't unfortunately been there. He's been very good defensively. I know that's something he's worked on to really improve, is making sure his whole game and around was better. And I think the goals will start coming now, hopefully.
Eric, wanted to ask you, you know, you're a young goaltender yourself, 21 years old, but when it comes to Jamie Phillips, you're actually the veteran. What has it been like for you to help Jamie Phillips with his first year with the Manitoba Moose organization?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's been awesome to have Jamie. I mean, I've known Jamie since I was just drafted, 18 years old. He was at development camp. All the goalies developed a strong bond right away, and he's just been an unbelievable guy. He's a very good goaltender, got a lot of skill. It's funny because I still think of him as the veteran because he's older than me, so it's funny like that. It's just funny how things work out that I just happen to have more games than him, even though he's 2 years older than me.
Eric, one thing you've been doing this season is getting out into the community and meeting folks from around Winnipeg at schools and various community events. What have you taken from those interactions?
I think just how fortunate we are. I mean, it's just we're so lucky to be pro hockey players. We do something we love every single day, and a lot of people don't have the same luxury as us, and I think the more we can get out there and help is very, very important for us to help our community out and just share how lucky we are.
We're joined by Eric Comrie, Manitoba Moose goaltender and Winnipeg Jets prospect, live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Eric, I wanted to ask you what you were able to talk to Connor Hellebuck about before your first NHL game. What was he able to share with you as far as maybe what to look forward to and, you know, just his own experiences, because it wasn't so long ago that he was going through his first NHL game.
Oh, for sure. I mean, Helly and I are still great friends. We still talk a lot. We spent a year together in the American League, and we became really close. He's an excellent guy. He was a great mentor for me my first little bit in the American League before I got called up. And I think he's an unbelievable goalie I can learn a lot from. Honestly, the biggest thing is just said you're going to have some butterflies. And that's really about it. The rest is just play your game. He knows you can do it. And I think we talked more about the Masters than the actual game.
Was it helpful for you, Eric, that you and Jack were both going through the motions as far as your first NHL game?
Oh, for sure. I think that helps to have someone that I consider really close to me. I mean, not only that, but he also does my pregame warm-up shots and morning skate, and he was there for me to do that. So it kind of helped even set the routine a little bit more, I think. The more and more you can revert back to your old routine, the more and more it helps.
Eric, last night you guys won the 27th game for the season for your team, and you know that last year you only had 26, so you've surpassed that number. But of course, you know it's second year in a row without playoffs. What would you look back on this season and have to say about the Manitoba Moose 2016-17 year?
It's a tough question because I think a lot of individual players had a lot of growth this year. A lot of people got a lot better, but at the end of the day, we didn't reach our goal of making the playoffs. So I don't know. As a standpoint of development, I think we got a lot better. I think a lot of good things happened. I mean, got to see a lot of players have breakout years in the American League. Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovich got a lot better every single day. A lot of defensemen like Nelson Noje is now playing in the NHL. I think that's huge success for our team. But you look at the team success wasn't quite there, and that's a little bit of a disappointment. We wanted to push for a Calder Cup, and unfortunately that's not what we're doing right now.
Eric, we really appreciate you coming on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show today, and congratulations on your first career NHL victory. All of us here back in Winnipeg were watching it, and it was great to see not only you get your first NHL win, but the Jets pick up their sixth win in a row.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot, Eric. Let's head to break. Yeah. We'll be back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Your next shot at the ultimate Canadian live sports tour is coming. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca. Bollmeister, two-on-two shorthanded. Taves drives the defense back, passes off. He shoots, he scores. Brad Marchand off the bench into the play from Jonathan Taves.
Brad Marchand scoring the game-winning goal, 2016 World Cup of Hockey. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Big thanks to Eric Comrie of the Manitoba Moose and Winnipeg Jets for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Dave, we have to talk about Brad Marchand. It was pretty much one of the biggest pieces of news of the week. Suspended two games for his spear on Tampa Bay Lightning defenseman Jake Dotchin. I want to play the audio from the NHL Department of Player Safety explaining why Brad Marchand was suspended for two games. Then we're going to come back and talk about whether or not two games was enough for Brad Marchand. Let's play that audio.
Tuesday night in Boston, Bruins forward Brad Marchand was assessed a major penalty and game misconduct for spearing Lightning defenseman Jake Dotchin. As the video shows, with the puck at the Bruins' point, Marchand has established position in front of the Lightning net. Dotchin goes to him and delivers a light shove to Marchand's shoulder. Marchand turns, opens up the blade of his stick, and delivers a forceful spear directly to the groin of Dotchin. This is spearing. Stick infractions are common in the National Hockey League. With rare exceptions, the vast majority of these plays can be sufficiently penalized by the on-ice officials. What causes this play to rise to the level of supplemental discipline is the intent, the amount of force used, and Marchand's substantial history of attacking the lower body of unsuspecting opponents. This is not accidental or inadvertent contact. This is not light contact that, while illegal, does not rise to the level of supplemental discipline. This is not an attempt to restrain an opponent with a hook that is executed parallel to the ice, or an attempt to limit an opponent's movement with a stick positioned between the legs. Marchand intentionally drives his stick both up and into Dotchin with substantial force. In determining the severity of supplemental discipline, the collective bargaining agreement between the NHL and the NHL Players Association states, players who repeatedly violate league playing rules will be more severely punished for each new violation. Not only is Marchand a repeat offender under the terms of the collective bargaining agreement, he was fined earlier this season for a dangerous trip on Detroit defenseman Nicholas Cronwall. In total, Marchand has been fined or suspended seven times previously in his 534-game NHL career, five of which have been for attacking the lower body of his opponents. To summarize, this is spearing. Marchand is a repeat offender under the terms of the collective bargaining agreement. The Department of Player Safety has suspended Brad Marchand for two games.
Unbelievable. Brad Marchand, Dave, at 28 years old, has been now suspended seven times. First off, did you think two games was enough for this? We saw it. We've all seen the replay. We've watched it multiple times now. Should he have got more games for that spear?
First off, I think that Department of Player Safety video needs to have like the Benny Hill music, or they need some theme music for that. I mean, it was so serious, and maybe a little Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm, something to liven it up a little. You know what, Ez, I don't know, does it really have much impact? I mean, he loses the last two regular season games. Boston has clinched a playoff spot. So, I mean, from Boston's perspective, are they really, you know, they're almost getting a benefit. The player gets to sit out, chill, relax. You know, he gets to rest up for the playoffs. Obviously, you never want to lose a player, but you know what I'm saying? Like, the impact to Boston isn't that significant. It's not as if they were in a playoff race, then I would say maybe it's a little bit more impactful. But because they've already clinched, I mean, at that point, really, are you concerned about it? No, because it's not going to impact them in the playoffs. So I don't know if it has much teeth. And you just said it has. He's been suspended now seven times. I mean, if it was his first time, I'd be like, okay, fine. You know, sure, it was dirty. But like, and again, if Brad Marchand is that player, if he's not on your team, you absolutely loathe Brad Marchand. You can't stand him. But there are so many players like that that, you know, if he's on your team, he's that guy who you absolutely love to have on your playing on your line or playing for you. So it's a tough one. But, I mean, again, if you're wearing a Bruins jersey or if you're a Bruins fan, then you're not concerned about what Brad Marchand does. But if it's anyone else in the league, you don't like what he did. And you probably think that he deserved a little bit more based on his history.
Dave, Brad Marchand missed Thursday night's game against the Ottawa Senators, a game in which the Senators won in a shootout. He's going to miss tonight's game It's actually, sorry, it's an afternoon game between the Bruins and Capitals. But as you mentioned, the Capitals have already clinched the President's Trophy. They're going to finish first in the league and in the Eastern Conference. And the Bruins have already clinched a playoff spot, right? So I agree with you. As far as missing these two games, it's pretty insignificant as far as I'm concerned. And I've said repeatedly on this show, Dave, you know this, I'm a huge fan of Brad Marchand's game. But in this case, I think you got to give him at least five games. And that's because of the history. And you just can't have guys spearing other players like that in the open in front of the referees. And it doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if it's Victor Hedman or Jake Dotchin. It's the act and it's the history. And I realize that we say, oh, you don't have to factor in the history and all of that. But they do. We played the audio, the NHL Department of Player Safety explaining why Brad Marchand was suspended two games. And they do factor that in. If you're a repeat offender, it's kind of similar to really the criminal justice system, if you think about that, right? If you've stolen a car five times, most likely when you steal a car the sixth time, it's probably going to be a worse punishment, right? I don't know if that's the best analogy.
No, that's,
I got 147 on the LSAT and never went to law school. Dave, you went to law school, so I might not be the best person to make those legal analogies. But Brad Marchand, certainly, when you consider, Dave, that this is, I think, easily his best year in his NHL career, when you consider he won gold with Canada at the World Cup of Hockey, and then he's set career highs in goals and points this year. He's got 39 goals and 85 points, and we've talked about it in weeks past on the show. I think whether or not Brad Marchand is a finalist for the Hart Trophy, Dave, that remains to be seen, but at the very least, he's in the conversation, right? And if you're in the conversation for the Hart Trophy, that means that you're having a pretty darn good year. You're up there with guys like Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, Patrick Kane, Nikita Kucherov, guys like this, right? So Marchand, I think, when you consider that he's had so much problems with the fines for the trip on Nicholas Cronwall and now the suspension for the spear on Jake Dotchin, I think it kind of diminishes a little bit what he's doing. And when I look at a guy like Brad Marchand, he's still relatively young at 28 years old, and you don't want him to not play, you know, his brand of hockey, which is in your face, getting in the corners, laying hits and all that. I don't think you want him to change that, Dave. But as far as I'm concerned, when you talk about acts like spearing and all of that, I think he's really got to take that out of the game, because I really think it's diminishing what he's doing on the ice.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you're, look, this is the guy who's fourth right now in the NHL in points. And, yeah, and in one way that the suspension does hurt him is that he was one goal away from 40 for the first time in his career. And that's a fairly significant milestone to hit 40 goals in the NHL, yeah, these days at least. So,
and he's not going to get to do that.
No, and he won't have that opportunity. So that does burn him a little bit, but that's more of an individual thing than anything else. Yeah, you know what, Ezzy, it's a fine line, because the fact is that you're right. That is the kind of game he plays. He does play an on-the-edge sort of style where it's an abrasive, you know, in-your-face type player. And it's hard because, you know, you have to say, well, where do I draw the line, right? If I'm not going to do X, am I also not going to do Y? But the fact is, at the end of the day, you have to understand that, A, there's more eyes on the prize. There's more people watching the games. And the reality is you can't get away with the things that you used to be able to get away with. And Brad Marchand is not – it's not like he's a 20-year veteran of the NHL and remembers the way it used to be and the way the things you could have done. He's young enough that he can adjust his game and really eliminate – really stupid and needless things. And again, like I said, I'm a fan of what he does. When he plays for Team Canada, you watch that guy and you think to yourself, there's a reason he is on this team. He's not there by accident. But again, like I said, there's just certain elements of his game like that, or like the trip on Cronwall. I hated that. I thought that was completely needless, that he could eliminate from his game and it wouldn't be a problem.
And, you know, we talked about it, a few minutes ago, Dave. The Boston Bruins have already clinched a playoff spot. So in that sense, you know, Brad Marchand knows that his team is going to the playoffs. But they're only 1 point behind the Ottawa Senators, and they're only 2 points ahead of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, I mean, there is the chance, with Toronto having two games left and Boston having one game left, there is the chance that Toronto can pass Boston and play Ottawa in the first round. So there is always the chance that Boston falls into that second wild card spot and ends up having to play Washington, who they play tonight, right? So wouldn't you want Brad Marchand in the lineup for these last couple of games? You lost the last game to the Ottawa Senators. Now you're going to play the Washington Capitals. And, Dave, we expect the Washington Capitals with two games left here, they'll probably rest some of their players, right? I don't know if Ovi and Backstrom and Oshie and some of their other top players are going to play both of these games or just one of these games, but my point is, for Brad Marchand, you know, he misses the last two games of the season, and the Boston Bruins really need him, right? Because there is still seeding to play for. And when you talk about, you know, getting into that second wild card spot, you know that the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to want to beat Pittsburgh tonight and make sure that it doesn't come down to that last game. Nobody wants to play Washington in the first round. I think we can both agree with that, right? And I think it's really unfortunate that the Bruins tonight against Washington aren't going to have Marchand in the lineup, because the Ottawa Senators play the Rangers, and they're going to want to kind of put clinch second in the Atlantic, right? Because if they register two more points, they're going to be up to 98 points, which means that both Boston and Toronto can't catch them. But then when you're talking about the Bruins, if they lose this game and the Leafs are able to get at least 3 points, you know, they could still win their last couple of games. They'll be happy with one, though, Dave. But I think that's what's unfortunate about this, that he is going to miss that opportunity to help the Bruins get a better playoff spot.
Yeah, and I think you've just illustrated as that there are ramifications to his actions. I mean, sure, what I was talking about earlier is that the Bruins essentially clinched, or they were close to clinching at that point. And the fact is, but you're right, seeding hadn't been determined. And the truth is, nobody wants to play Washington in the first round. I don't know anybody who's going to say, yeah, I'd rather play Washington than, I mean, right now how it's set up, I think they play Ottawa in the first round. So would you rather play? And don't get me wrong, the Senators have been a shocking team. Like, I expected them to be better than they were last year, but I didn't expect them to be this improved. And we've talked about Ottawa a number of times throughout the season as about how they've been a different team this year and how much they've improved. But again, if you're saying, do you want to play the Senators or do you want to play the Washington Capitals? I think it's a fairly easy answer as to who you're choosing to pick.
Well, you're talking about the Ottawa Senators and a -2 goal differential against the Washington Capitals with a +81 goal differential. So I don't think it's even a question that you want to play the Ottawa Senators in the first round if you're the Leafs. And if you're the Boston Bruins, same thing. You want to play the Ottawa Senators in the first round. What's really interesting is that you're going to have Pittsburgh playing Columbus again in the first round. They're essentially locked in there. The Rangers can't catch the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Rangers are going to play the Montreal Canadiens in the first round. And as you mentioned, right now it's Ottawa really looking like they're going to finish second. There is a chance that the Bruins could pass them, but the Senators have the game in hand. But certainly you're trying to avoid the Washington Capitals right now at all costs. And, you know, Dave, going back to Brad Marchand, I think, you know, this year you mentioned, you know, he's got 39 goals and he's been suspended 7 times now and fined this year, and he's been fined in the past as well. When you look at the Boston Bruins, I guess, do you think there's any chance that whether they play the Washington Capitals or the Ottawa Senators, that they're going to go far in the playoffs? Because for me, the Boston Bruins are one of those teams that I think is slightly flawed when you compare them against the top teams in the East.
Yeah, I would think that they definitely can knock off Ottawa. I think that if they play Ottawa in the first round, I think there's, I mean, that I would probably give the edge to Boston. But at the same time, if I'm putting Boston up against Washington in the first round, I think it's Washington's series to win. So, I don't see Boston as a deep playoff team this year. I think that there's just too many others that, you know, like Washington, Pittsburgh, Columbus, the Rangers, Montreal. I think those teams are all far superior to the Bruins.
And, you know, the Bruins are obviously still very solid in net. Tuukka Rask having an excellent season. Quietly, he's got 37 wins on the season, Dave. He's played 64 games. But, yeah, after Brad Marchand, David Krejci, Patrice Bergeron, after those players, their top guys, there's a significant drop-off there. And, you know, David Pastrnak, I should also throw in there. He's got 70 points, but there's a significant drop-off there. Torrey Krug's had a nice season. But you're really expecting a lot out of guys like Ryan Spooner and David Backes. To me, secondary scoring is going to be an issue. And I agree with you. I think I could see the Bruins beating the Senators in a first-round series. But if they're going up against the Montreal Canadiens, I really like the moves that the Montreal Canadiens have made over the last year. I would take the Montreal Canadiens over the Boston Bruins. But certainly, I think they could probably win a round. But again, I think if you're playing the Washington Capitals in the first round, you're at a significant disadvantage. This is another season where the Capitals are going to win the President's Trophy. They've already clinched the President's Trophy. And, you know, you throw in Kevin Shattenkirk. They make a good defense. Not a good defense. You make a great defense even better. We're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Bob Duff. He's covered the Detroit Red Wings for many years. We're going to talk to Bob about Joe Louis Arena. Joe Louis Arena, the final two ever home games are going to be played this weekend. So we're going to get Bob's thoughts on one of the most iconic rinks in the entire league. The Detroit Red Wings are moving to a new arena next year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
O'clock in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk. This segment of the show brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information about Linden Market Dental Center, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Let's go back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Bob Duff, Detroit Red Wings writer for HockeyBuzz.com and author of various books, including The 50 Greatest Red Wings. Bob, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's already afternoon here, but I'll give you guys good morning.
Yeah, we forgot that you were in the Eastern time zone, of course, Bob. Obviously, it's going to be a very special weekend this weekend. The last two home games are going to be played at the Joe Louis Arena. Is it safe to say that you might be reaching for the Kleenex box this weekend?
Not me. I'm not going to miss the place at all. I mean, we were talking the other day about it from our perspective as journalists, what we're going to miss about the place, and nobody could come up with a single positive thing. So I don't think from a work standpoint it wasn't a great facility, but certainly I saw a lot of great hockey there.
Now, Bob, what would be your top memory from covering the game, the many games you have in Joe Louis Arena?
I think it was, you know, the first time the Wings won the Cup there in 97, just because it had been so long. You know, at the time they hadn't won since 1955, which was the longest drought in the league at that point. And I'd seen that team, you know, gotten to know a lot of the guys on that team pretty well over the years and seen them go through countless heartbreaks where they thought this was going to be their year and it would come apart for one reason or another. And to finally see some of those guys that had waited years to get over that hump and finally savor the victory, it was something to, you know, to see the raw emotion of those guys. You know, people think that these guys play the game for the money. Well, when you see them out in the ice with the Stanley Cup, you realize they really don't.
You know, Bob, you mentioned earlier that when it comes to the age of the arena, a lot of the beat writers and broadcasters aren't going to be that upset to go to the new arena. When you talk about the arena, and I've never actually been to Joe Louis Arena, and it was one of those arenas that I really wanted to visit before it closed down. Dave has been to the Joe Louis Arena many times. For those who have never been to the arena, just describe, you know, from the second that you walk into the arena and to the time that you sit down, how would you best describe this arena to someone who's never been there?
Well, I think from a spectator point of view, it's a wonderful place to watch a game. They're really, even the high up seats, you still get a really good sight line because they've angled them. You know, the older buildings, this angle as you go up in the seats is much steeper than it is in the newer ones. And I think, you know, from sitting in the seats, and I have watched a few games from the seats, it's a great place to watch a game. It has kind of that old hockey barn environment that a lot of the new rinks, which seem so antiseptic, you go from one to the other and you really don't notice any kind of quirky characteristics to it. The Joe has quirky characteristics. It's one of the last arenas to make the boards out of wood, so you get some really wild bounces with the puck off the backboards. And in fact, Nick Lidstrom used to have a play where he would deliberately shoot wide and hit a spot on the boards because he knew it would angle right into the slot, and the Wings scored a lot of goals that way.
Bob, are there any, like, what are the special guests? Are there any special guests, I should say, that are coming in for the final ceremony in the last game?
They've been pretty hush-hush about what the plans are, but, you know, they've been pretty, I think you're going to see something very similar to the final night at Maple Leaf Gardens, where they had players from all eras come out and represent that era of the team. And I know, like, for example, the Wings contacted me last week. They were trying to hunt down Wayne Maxner, who was one of the first coaches of the team at the Joe, and I helped them get a hold of him. So they're really not leaving any stone unturned. I think you're going to see hundreds of former Red Wings alumni involved in the ceremony, and it'll be, you know, for Red Wing fans, although they might not want to remember those early 80s teams, it'll certainly be a tearjerker.
Bob, I don't know if this is irony, but is it somewhat ironic or coincidental that the final game at Joe Louis Arena is going to be featured with the New Jersey Devils and the Detroit Red Wings? The Devils, of course, swept the Red Wings back in 1995. By the way, a team that was absolutely stacked. Nobody was really expecting the Devils to sweep the Red Wings that year.
As been overlooked in all the hype is that the second visiting team to win a game at Joe Louis Arena were the New Jersey Devils in their previous life as the Colorado Rockies, with Don Cherry behind the bench and Hardy Astrom in the goal for the win. So, you know, there is some sort of history there, I guess, even if no one wants to talk about it. But I think, you know, the cynic in me says they knew coming down the stretch that games with Toronto and Montreal and the other traditional rivals at Colorado were going to sell out. So why put one of them in for the last game when you know that game's going to sell out too? So, I mean, again, that's me, the cynic. So I think that's why it's New Jersey rather than like tonight when they're playing Montreal. That would seem to make a more logical choice for a farewell game.
I would imagine it would be will probably be some sort of ode to Mike Ilitch, who the Red Wing, longtime Red Wings owner, who lost his life this year.
Oh, certainly, and if you saw the Tigers opener yesterday, there was quite a tribute to Mr. Ilitch prior to that game, a very emotional moment for a lot of fans and certainly even for the players. He was a very hands-on owner, and everybody got to know him. He was not one of these guys that just showed up once a year. He was always around the rink, and you knew if you played for the Red Wings, he let you know you were part of the family.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by Bob Duff, Detroit Red Wings writer for HockeyBuzz.com and author of various books, including The 50 Greatest Detroit Red Wings. Bob, have you had a chance to visit Little Caesars Arena yet?
I have, and I've also done the virtual tour, and I've seen the scale models. And the good news is, first of all, it does have a press box, which is one of the reasons why the media hates Joe Louis Arena, because they actually forgot to put a press box in the blueprint. So they literally ripped out the last row of seats in one side of the rink, and that's where the press box is. So the press box is the worst seat in the house. So, but the new one has a beautiful two-tiered press box, one tier for print media, one tier for broadcast media. So it's going to be, they've left no stone unturned. And, you know, I've seen some of the grandiose plans they had at the start. Now, I don't know how many of them they're going to follow through on, but they intended when they began to build this place to make it something that nobody had ever seen before. And if they followed through on that, it's going to be quite the place to watch a game.
And, you know, Bob, what does the downtown arena mean for the city of Detroit in and of itself? Because, I mean, you know, there's, you know, a lot of, you know, I've driven through Detroit. I've spent a lot of time in Michigan. And, you know, there was a lot of downturn in the economy. So, I mean, you have this big arena being built in the heart of the downtown. What does that mean for the city?
Well, it's not just the arena. It's called, there's a whole area they're building up. It's called the District Detroit, and they're putting in shops and, you know, condos, and there's lots of, they're really trying to revitalize the downtown neighborhood and bring the city back. And I think it's been a steady process. You know, it started with Comerica Park, and then you had Ford Field right next door to Comerica Park, and now you're going to have, you know, the Pistons and the Wings basically playing across the road from those two stadiums. So you can almost literally throw a blanket over the four facilities for the major sports teams in Detroit. And there's even speculation now of them adding a major league soccer team and putting a stadium for them in the same area. So it's really, you know, they're using sports to revitalize the downtown, and it's having an impact.
We're joined by Bob Duff on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Bob, the Detroit Red Wings 25-year playoff run is going to come to an end this year. Is this a rebuild situation for Ken Holland? What's the offseason going to look like for the Red Wings general manager?
Well, I don't see any quick fix to what ails this team. And the biggest problem they have is defense. They just do not have, in an era when mobile puck-moving defensemen are so vital to the way the game is played today, they just don't have a guy who can do that. And, you know, you look beyond Mike Green, I think their next highest scoring defenseman has 12 points. So it's just, you know, they signed Dennis Chalowski, their first-round pick from the last draft, on Thursday, and I basically wrote a piece saying this guy has to be a home run because they have got nothing in the system or on the roster that can do that, fill that role, and they need this kid who they believe can be that kind of defenseman. They need him to blossom into that defenseman, because otherwise it's going to be more than 1 year in a row out of the playoffs.
Bob, one player that on the forward end of things, it looked pretty good. I saw him play when Grand Rapids was in town, was Evgeny Svechnikov. What are the Wings expecting out of him?
They're pretty excited about him because he has this natural talent to score goals, but he also has a tremendous work ethic, and he plays the game hard, and he uses his size to get the puck back. And that's one of the things they've been really hammering into Anthony Mantha, who is a similar physical specimen to Svechnikov and also a big goal scorer. But he tends to not play that kind of game where he uses his physical abilities to get the puck back and plays consistently hard on the puck. And they've sat him out a couple games to try to get that message through to him. And, you know, if they could get Svechnikov's work ethic into Mantha, they'd have two really potent, big power forwards that could make a big difference. I don't think forward-wise, I think the Wings are going to be okay with those two, and Athanasiou and Larkin. You know, they've got some young, talented forwards. It's just, as I said earlier, the defense is just, it's just barren for skill.
So in your opinion, Bob, do they have to go out and try to really acquire a free agent defenseman, say a Kevin Shattenkirk? I know there's going to be other teams after him, but is that the type of player that this team needs?
Well, if they want to try for the quick fix, certainly he's the best option out there, but I just can't see him, you know, when he has his choice of teams, why are you going to come to a team that just missed the playoffs? So, and, you know, doesn't look like a contender. So I think if he's going to be a hard sell to bring to Detroit. And you look around in recent years, you know, it used to be, you know, Detroit was turning guys away that wanted to play here. And now in recent years, you know, they've gone after Suter, they've gone after Parise, you know, the guys they've pursued have turned them down for different reasons. And now they're hoping the new arena will change some minds, but, you know, it still comes down to guys want to win. I mean, you look at, with a salary cap, you're going to get the same money anywhere you go. So you want to go somewhere where you have a chance to win the cup.
Now, Bob, you mentioned Andreas Athanasiou. It's a tough name to pronounce. There's lots of A's and E's in that name. Has he been one of the biggest bright spots for this team? He's got a career-high 18 goals. This is only his second year in the league, but he was a fourth-round pick back in 2012. Every time I watch him play, you know, you can really see the speed and skill that he's got.
He certainly has that, but the issues that the team has had with him is he doesn't always use his speed to his advantage. He tends to, like Mantha, take nights off. And the other thing that, you know, in today's NHL, there's so, you know, it's such low-scoring, tight games that you can't afford to give away goals. And Andreas tends to every once in a while cheat on the offensive side of the puck and get caught and give up odd man rushes and scoring chances. And they're trying to get that out of his game, but his offensive upside is tremendous, and certainly his speed is, I think he's one of the fastest, if not the fastest player in the NHL.
Bob, one player who looks like he could go the whole season without scoring a goal is Riley Sheehan. What do you think is going to be do you think he will go the whole season without scoring, and what does that mean for Riley Sheehan going forward?
It's baffling, really, because this is a guy who has scored. You know, he had 27 goals over the previous two seasons, you know, 13 and 14, and really to get zero. And, you know, his season was kind of summed up the other night in there playing Toronto, and he had a wide open net and he shot it, and Connor Carrick, the Leaf defenseman, put his skate out and blocked it. So, you know, there was no goalie in the net and he still couldn't put it in. It's just like, it just seems at this point that nothing's going to go in for the guy. And he's, you know, he's making NHL history that nobody wants to make, because he's going to be the first forward in the history of the NHL to have more than 100 shots on goal and not score a goal. So he'll put his name in the hall of shame, I guess it would be. But it's just, and yet, you know, there were teams that wanted him at the trade deadline because he does offer, he's a big forward, he's strong defensively, he can play in front of the net on the power play. He's got a lot of attributes to his game, and teams were thinking maybe we can steal him for a song from the Wings because of the off year he's had. But the Wings wanted the price for the Sheehan that was scoring 13, 14 goals a year, not the Sheehan that hasn't scored this year, so that's why he didn't get traded. But I think that, you know, they've got to just bite the bullet and hope it's just some kind of weird aberration, and next year he returns to the player he's been the previous 2 years.
Well, Bob, there are two regular season home games left at Joe Louis Arena. The Red Wings aren't going to make the playoffs this year. By the way, that just sounds really weird to say that, because for most of my years on this earth, the Red Wings have made the playoffs every year. So unfortunately, they're not going to make it this year, but enjoy the festivities this weekend as we say goodbye to Joe Louis Arena.
I will. It'll be a bizarre weekend, you know, saying goodbye and then packing up for the season. It just doesn't seem right for the Wings to be going home in April.
All right. Say hi to former Winnipeg Jets draft pick Chris Draper for us, Bob.
I will.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bob. Let's head to break. We'll be back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Gretzky had it, launched it, Yzerman picks it up. Yzerman moving, blue line, chance.
So many great memories at the Joe Louis Arena. By the way, what's going on here with the Timbits? I come back. I took a little bit of a break here to warm up my coffee. I come back. You guys are chowing down on Timbits, and then I don't have enough time to get one in. Rory's got two in his mouth.
Oh, I had to go hard because I saw Rory was hoarding the Timbits. So I went, and I wanted to get a couple.
You know, Dave, I'm filling in for Drew Mandel, who's off this week. And, you know, I got to do a lot of talking here. I need sustenance as well.
I believe there's still four Timbits left for, right?
Yeah, you guys left me a half-eaten one there. Actually, Richie used to be the worst at that. Yeah, he would take bites, and then he would drop, like, half of a Timbit back in there, and then I'd give him a hard time, and he'd say, what, you have that half one? You mean the one that you ate half
that's
of?
That's got half your saliva on it?
Yeah,
no, thank
exactly.
You.
Well, I think, actually, to Richie's credit, he would actually rip half of it off.
He does that a lot. Good point.
You remember Richie, right?
No.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk here, and Rory McGoran, of course. You know, great interview with Bob Duff there. You know, Dave, I want to spend a little bit of time here. We should mention that coming up at 11:30, we're going to be joined by Chris Peters, who's in Chicago for the Frozen Four final tonight between the University of Denver and University of Minnesota Duluth. We're going to talk to Chris about that game. We're also going to touch on the United States women who beat Canada last night for their second consecutive Women's World Championship. It might be more than two in a row, actually. They've won the Women's World Championship many times. Seems like Canada usually gets them back in the Olympics, though, right, Dave?
Yeah, no, that's kind of where you want to win it, is the on the biggest stage available, so not a bad thing.
I want to spend, you know, 5 or 6 minutes here, Dave, just going over, you know, your memories, because you spent significant amounts of time in Michigan. And you've been to the Joe Louis Arena. I haven't. And unfortunately, I was trying to get there at some point this year, and it just didn't work out. I'm a very busy guy, and I have many arenas to go to. What was it like for you, Dave, those games that you saw at Joe Louis Arena and some, I guess, a memory that stands out for you from the Joe Louis Arena?
Well, you know, I can speak to having been able to witness it from both ends. I sat in the seats, and I've also sat in the press box. When Bob Duff was talking about the worst press box in sports, one he won't miss, I understood that, because it is extremely tight. Like, you are – first, I mean, the nice thing is you feel like you're in the action. Like, the MTS Center has a great press box because you're right over the action, and you can really analyze everything because you can see all aspects of the game. In Detroit, you're almost like in the crowd. The crowd is basically right in front of you. You can almost slap five with the fans that are right in the last row, and you get a bit more of an experience in terms of that. But again, the workstations are really tiny because, as Bob said, it wasn't planned to have a press box area. So because of that, you don't have a lot of workspace. But it really was an iconic building, and you know, from the perspective of, it didn't have an upper deck; it was just one big bowl, and it was steep. The seating was rather steep, but it had an energy, and it really does. Like, I don't know, like I said, I was fortunate enough to see a number of Detroit Red Wings games there, so I really did get a chance to enjoy it. I saw the Stanley Cup Finals there. I saw Game One of Stanley Cup Finals. It was actually fun. I talked to Kelly Rudy, who you guys were having on the show back in the day. At the game, and it was, you know, it was a really good atmosphere, and that was the year they lost to Pittsburgh, unfortunately, with the Nicholas Lidstrom chance to tie it, but late. But you know what, it was a really great building, and despite all the hard economic times that Detroit and the Michigan area has undergone over the last, you know, number of decades. They've always supported their sports teams, and whether it's the Red Wings or the Tigers or the Lions or the Pistons, they've got a really good fan base in Michigan, and fans came out, you know, when they didn't have a lot of disposable income to spend their money on Red Wings tickets. And again, you know, the funny thing is there are really a lot of, like, friendly folks there. And, you know, sometimes people think, oh, Detroit, they have this misconception. It's really dangerous and, oh, it's sketchy. And, I mean, then again, most people have these misconceptions on cities they've never been to. But I have to tell you, I was always comfortable there, and I parked, you know, I could park 5 minutes away from the arena and walk. And a buddy of mine from school, luckily his uncle was like head of security for Ford. So we used to park underground in the Ford tower about 5 minutes away, and we'd walk or we'd get a lift to the games when it was a little chillier. But the truth was, like, we had people seeing us walking when it was probably like minus 15, and literally this lady stopped, and, you know, two younger guys, and she said, do you guys want to ride? It's freezing out, and drove us to the arena. And you know, it was that sort of a mentality. There was a lot of really friendly, really nice people, but it was great. And probably my most iconic memory probably was the Gordie Howe moment I had when I was there covering the game for LegalCurve.com. I was in the press box, and I'm walking down. It was just before Detroit was leaving for Sweden to play some games there and over in Sweden. So there was a Swedish reporter covering all the Swedish players on the team, and he and I were sitting beside each other, and neither one of us really knew where to go after the game, to the press box, to the Red Wings room. And we're walking down the stairs of the building, and we kind of come to the basement, and there's people behind us, but we're not really paying attention. We're just kind of engaging in conversation, and we kind of get to the bottom, and we look to the right and look to the left. There's doors both ways, and he looks at me and goes, well, which way? And I'm like, this is my first time in the arena in this capacity. I have no idea. And all of a sudden, I feel this, like, presence behind me, and I get a tap on the shoulder, and he goes, I hear this voice go, young fella, if you go to the right, a lot of police are going to come. And I look back, it's Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe. So I thought it was kind of neat, and he directed me the right way to go, and I went and did my interviews for the website. So it was a lot of fun, and good memory to have from Detroit.
I love that story, Mr. Hockey. There is nobody better than Mr. Hockey, and they're definitely going to be remembering both Gordie Howe and Mike Ilitch, I imagine, tonight and tomorrow, the last couple of games, tonight against the Montreal Canadiens, and then tomorrow against the New Jersey Devils. Dave, I want to play a quick clip here of Mike Babcock. It's only 20 seconds, but I just want to play it. It's him talking about the closing of the Joe Louis Arena.
You know, as much as the building makes it special, it's the people that make it special. And from Al Sabatka, who drives the Zamboni for Leslie, who hands out the food, Frankie brings the coaches the beer, to all the guys that did the cleaning, to the Ilitch family and what they made so special. But the fans here were fantastic and set a standard, expected a standard, expected a way of play, expected to be in the playoffs. And it's been an unbelievable building, lots of fond memories.
I love Babcock talking about Frankie bringing the coaches beer.
Yeah, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. Obviously, in Joe Louis Arena, after the game, you know, the coaches sit back and have a couple Bud Lights.
Yeah, I guess so. Again, like I said, I didn't realize that was a thing. I've never seen that. I've never witnessed that. Paul Maurice being brought beer at the MTS Center, but maybe I'll have to keep an eye out.
Yeah, I guess, like, in today's day and age, most coaches are just drinking Gatorade water, energy drinks.
But we're going to keep an eye out, Ez, because if we can intercept said beer taker, we will bring it up to the press box.
And, you know, that goes back to what we were talking about before, Dave, about this iconic building. By the way, the Saddle Dome is now the oldest arena in the league.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I think it was built in 1983, if I'm not mistaken. 1982 or 83, 5 years or so before the Winter Olympics in Calgary.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I think that's interesting because it's been a while since the oldest rink has been in Canada, right?
Yeah.
You had Nassau Veterans Coliseum in Long Island, and then you had Joe Louis Arena. And, you know, it kind of makes you think, wow, I guess in and there has obviously been the arena debate in Calgary. We know that there's going to be a new arena there eventually. That's an arena I have been to several times.
Mm-hmm.
Love that arena. I mean, we went down there. You went down there as well, Dave,
yep,
in 2004 when the Calgary
Game
Flames.
Game 6.
That was an incredible playoff run. We were there when they were playing, actually, the Red Wings.
For the second round.
That was the second round.
Yeah,
because if I'm not mistaken, they played Vancouver in the first round, right?
I think so.
Vancouver was the first round. Was it not San Jose in the third round? It was obviously Tampa Bay in the finals.
Tampa Bay in the finals, yeah.
But if I'm not mistaken, they played San Jose back in 2004 in the Western Finals. I could be wrong about that. But The Saddle Dome is a fantastic arena. Again, great atmosphere. It's obviously a peculiar design for an arena, right? There's a reason it's called the Saddle Dome. But what I like is you can be anywhere in the arena and you can still get a good view of the ice surface. So, you know, Mike Babcock talking there about Al Sobotka, the famous Zamboni driver there. You know, we know all of the history, the Red Wings winning the Stanley Cups, obviously back-to-back in 1997 and 1998, and then in 2002 and 2008, and then going to the finals against Pittsburgh in 2009. I think it's incredible, and I think, you know, in a way, you know, you almost are happy that the Red Wings didn't make the playoffs this year and that they can end their season at Joe Louis Arena, right? Like, obviously, they would like to be going to the playoffs, but I think in a way, it's almost fitting that they're not making the playoffs this year and that they're going to end with these two home games, because I think the eyes of the hockey world, Dave, are going to be on Joe Louis Arena this weekend, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah, I think you're 100%. First of all, you're right about the who Calgary played. It was Vancouver and San Jose.
Not bad for a guy who's killed a lot of brain cells over the years, Dave.
No, you got a good memory. No question about that. But anyways, no, to your point, as I think you're absolutely right. I think rather than just kind of meekly going out in a first-round exit quickly, this way they have the opportunity to really give the pomp and ceremony for that closing of that iconic building what it deserves, which is kind of that opportunity to really stand alone and be the have all the eyes of the hockey world focused on Detroit, Michigan, and really watching as they close a historic building and get ready to open up a new one.
Let's head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our good friend Chris Peters. He's in another great city, Chicago, Illinois. We're going to talk to Chris about the Frozen Four final tonight. We're going to find out who is the American NCAA national champion this year. It was University of North Dakota last year. We've got Denver and then the University of Minnesota Duluth in the final tonight. We'll be back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
In front of that shot. Now Johnson moving in. Shot, they score! Minnesota Duluth going back to the Frozen Four. Adam Johnson with a breakout year this year gets the game winner in the region final. And that senior class of UMD is headed to the Frozen Four. The Windy City is calling the Duluth Bulldogs.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. Drew Mandel is off this week. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day on the station. Winnipeg Jets and Nashville Predators. Puck drops 6 o'clock p.m. Central tonight. Hustler and Lawless are going to kick off Winnipeg Jets game day at Boston Pizza City Place at 3 o'clock. And then you've got Rick Ralph and friends coming up at 5 o'clock prior to the game. Dave, we're going to have Chris Peters coming up right away to preview the Frozen Four final between Minnesota Duluth and Denver. University of North Dakota won last year. Now we're going to see who's going to take the championship this year. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Chris Peters, thank you very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Hey, it's good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Chris, so what's the buzz like down there in Windy City for tonight's game between Minnesota Duluth and Denver?
Well, it seems like there's a lot of buzz around Denver, you know, just with how dominant they were in that game against Notre Dame, and the fact that now there were some major awards given out last night, the Hobey Baker going to Will Butcher and the Mike Richter going to Tanner Gillette. You know, both Denver guys, it just feels like the momentum is swinging for the Pioneers. But I got to say, there is a large contingent of Minnesota Duluth fans that made the trip down, and this is certainly not terribly far for them. You know, it's a drivable distance. You can certainly fly to, and, you know, a lot of people from the Minnesota area. I saw some of them were taking in the White Sox game, playing Flippy Cup on the dugout. So there's it's kind of a festive atmosphere. The Frozen Four always brings a ton of people wherever it goes. And so this is the first time. I'm from Chicago originally, so this is the first time it's been here. So it's a real thrill, you know, to have it in my hometown and to kind of see that whole festive atmosphere come. You know, I think there are a lot of Notre Dame fans as well, so very disappointed. Notre Dame has a very large fan base in Chicago, and so to see, you know, many of them certainly probably selling their tickets these last couple of days. But really, you know, it's just kind of a fun, festive atmosphere, and Chicago is such a hockey town now. You know, very, I don't live here anymore, but it's kind of very, very different from when I was growing up, and the buzz around the city is certainly picking up, no question.
And Chris, of course, you've also got the 2017 NHL draft coming up in Chicago at the end of June. I also wanted to mention a former Mike Richter Award winner, Connor Hellebuyck.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and he remains one of the most dominant college goalies that I've seen in the last several years. And you know, certainly that was one of those years. I've been a Richter voter since it started, and you know that the Hellebuyck year was probably the easiest it's ever been to pick a winner. And he still is one of the best college goalies I've seen since really covering college hockey in general.
Well, and Chris, going back to tonight's Frozen Four final between the University of Denver and University of Minnesota Duluth, that game is going to take place at 7 o'clock Eastern, and that's going to be on ESPN tonight. How do these two teams match up? Does one team have a decided advantage over the other, or are you expecting this one to go the distance and be a close one-goal game?
Yeah, well, I think it's certainly going to be the best matchup in terms of you know, what we've seen at the Frozen Four, two teams that are very evenly matched. I've thought the entire season, these have been the best two teams in college hockey from start to finish. I think Harvard had a real good argument to be among them, you know, and certainly their record and their momentum at the end of the season when they just kept winning and winning and winning put them in that category. But we've seen Denver and Minnesota Duluth play twice this year. It was much earlier in the season. I think college teams really evolve over the course of the season, but these two teams have been consistently great. They split that series, so I'm expecting a very, very close matchup. I think, you know, in terms of, you know, when you look at the depth and you look at the forward depth that Denver has, I think that could potentially be the separating factor. But you look at the top six for both of these teams, and there's a lot of talent up there. There's a lot of high-quality players. You know, the first line for Minnesota Duluth with Alex Iafallo, Dominic Toninato, and Joey Anderson is as good a line in college hockey as you'll see. But then you've got two really great lines with Denver, and perhaps one of the most exciting players in college hockey all year in Henrik Borgstrom, who is nicknamed the artist for a reason. And yeah, so to see these two teams match up, I think there's a slight depth advantage for Denver, but I don't think it's enough to to completely overwhelm Minnesota Duluth. So I'd expect a very tight game. And we've really been treated to, over these last several years, some really compelling finals, you know, close games where, you know, a bounce here or there can change things for any team. So that's kind of what I expect from this game as well, because these two teams know each other well. They're conference rivals, and I think that they're you know, they've been the two best teams all year, so it's only fitting that they get to finish the season together.
Chris, you know, there was some hardware handed out on Friday. Will Butcher won the Hobie Baker. I think he was the first defenseman since 2009 to do that. And Matt Gilroy, if I'm recalling correctly. But
correct.
What can you tell us about Will Butcher's play? I mean, I assume that the Colorado folks in Colorado are eager to see him quickly in the fold once this is all wrapped up.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting. I'll get to what he does. The whole Colorado angle is kind of interesting because last year they basically said that they weren't going to sign him, which is ridiculous. I
mean, yeah,
it was ridiculous then. It looks worse now. I don't know if their opinion has changed, but if I'm Will Butcher, I'm very much considering, you know, the Jimmy Vesey route. If there's not an agreement in hand from Colorado, and obviously can't burn a year off his contract, they won't have any games left for him. You know, so I don't think that'll be interesting to see. So I don't know what the status is on that situation. I don't know how thoughts have changed about him organizationally. But, you know, when you look at what he's done, I'll talk about now just kind of what he is as a player. You know, there are very few players in college hockey that can kind of take over a game and control a game. I think Will Butcher is one of those players. He is easily, you know, obviously having won the Hobie Baker, there's no question he's one of the best players in college hockey, but he absolutely was, you know, the number one defenseman by a fairly large margin this year. He's just so skilled with the puck and has great offensive instincts. He's you know, we always see guys and we might look at their, you know, their height and weight and say, you know, maybe he's not a great defender. He's just a really, really smart hockey player, very well positioned. You know, his game is certainly more offensive minded, but he takes care of his own zone so well. And you look at the way that Denver controls the puck, and to any team that's a really dominant possession team like Denver is they're usually going to have a great puck moving defenseman, and they have that with him. So when he's on the ice, it's really difficult to keep control of the puck if you're the opposing team. So that's one of the things that I see about him. Obviously, the point production was outstanding. You know, he's a senior leader. He was the best player on the best team in college hockey, which I think had a lot to do with him winning the Hobie Baker this year. I thought this was an incredibly crowded Hobie Field this year, and I thought that both Zach Aston-Reese and Mike Vecchione, who were the two other finalists, were extremely deserving. And if either one of them would have won, I would have protested at all, because I think that they were that good. And then to see Will Butcher, I think he's getting rewarded partially for what his team has done, but also because, you know, when you look at the way that he controls a game and the way he can take games over, and I think we saw that even in the semifinal, you know, that's just what he does. And so I think if Colorado decides not to sign him, I think there would be a very long line of teams ready on August 15th when he'd become available. And you know, I just think there are so many teams that have openings for players like him. You know, maybe I see him as an NHL prospect, but even if he gives you some organizational depth, I think he's the kind of guy that, you know, could fill some holes, especially if you're looking for a puck moving defenseman. I don't think he's a top four guy necessarily, but maybe a power play guy, and he can fit in on your, you know, be a fifth or sixth guy. And maybe if things pan out, if he reaches his full potential, you know, you got a guy that could potentially hop in your top four with some more pro experience. So, I'll be very interested to see what happens with him, but to me, and especially having seen him the other night and how dominant he was, just a really special hockey player and one of the better college hockey defensemen I've seen in the last few years.
We're joined by Chris Peters live from Chicago on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline, previewing tonight's Frozen Four final between the University of Denver and University of Minnesota Duluth. Chris, you mentioned Henrik Borgstrom a little bit earlier, and he's had a great year for the University of Denver. He picked up 43 points in 36 games in the regular season. And Dave and I were at the draft in Buffalo, and he was drafted 23rd overall by the Florida Panthers, and it was a little bit surprising. He went right before Max Jones of the London Knights and some other good players as well, Riley Tuft, Tage Thompson, both Americans as well. When you look at Henrik Borgstrom, what do you think his offensive upside is at the NHL level? And is there a chance that he forgoes his second year with the University of Denver and turns pro, and maybe we'll see him in the NHL next year?
Yeah, you know, I think he's certainly got an opportunity to go pro right away. He's got great size, just an incredible mind for the game, finds the open ice extremely well, and then he's, you know, got some devastating moves. He's made a lot of defensemen look bad this year. With his hands, I think he's probably got three or four of the top 10 goals we've seen in college hockey this year, in terms of, you know, the way that he's able to play. And we saw him in the semifinal. Just, you know, he didn't necessarily have to take the game over because Denver was just so dominant, all their lines, all their defensemen. I mean, everybody was involved. But you know, when they need a goal, he's the kind of guy that can just find a way to score it for them. And so, you know, I certainly see him as a guy that has a high potential to be a one and done. And I remember being just like everybody else, where I was surprised to see him. He was kind of an off the board pick, and you know, it was one of those things that are the Florida Panthers outsmarting themselves with this one. But then the more you kind of looked into the numbers that he had in finished junior and looked at you know, the skill level and the size and everything, it became much clearer that, you know, this is a guy that they were absolutely justified in taking in the first round. And now we've seen him become, you know, a premier prospect. I think he could absolutely, you know, be a top six player in the NHL at the top of his potential. You know, just with what we've seen in terms of the creativity, and, you know, with these highly skilled players, it's not just the skills, it's how they use them and the smarts and their ability to find the soft areas of the ice and the way they see the ice. And I think he just sees the ice in a completely different way than a lot of the players in his peer group, and particularly in college hockey. He just had such an adjustment, and you always wonder how a guy is going to transition from Europe to North America. And as we've seen more and more over the years, that it's not that hard if they're really smart. and he's really smart. So I think I could see him signing pretty quickly. I think he's the kind of guy that, you know, based on the turnover that I think we'll probably see in Florida, he could, you know, probably slide in pretty quickly. So Dale Talon's in Chicago as well. I know I saw him the other day and on the Concourse. Didn't talk to him, but I saw him, and I was like, I wonder if he has a contract in his back pocket. and interestingly enough, the other great NHL prospect on Denver might be their head coach in Jim Montgomery.
Chris, you know, football has the bowl games. Basketball has the March Madness. What kind of buzz does this generate outside the city that it's being? So obviously it's in Chicago this year, but does it gain a certain amount of buzz outside of the host city?
You know, I think so. It's certainly among college hockey fans. I think no matter if your team is in or out, you're watching this game. I think if you're a hockey fan, you know, unfortunately with the way the schedule works out, you've got hugely important NHL games happening on the same day. So, you know, the attention has been split over the last few years. And you know, the reason that they don't play, that there's a gap, is because of the Final Four with basketball. So you're kind of forced into this position where you got to have this game on a day when really it's one of the most important days of the NHL season for several teams. So I think, you know, there's certainly buzz, though. I mean, it's always the most watched college hockey game of the year, obviously. You know, it's on ESPN in the States, and that gives it, just being on ESPN, it gives it a couple extra rating points because people just leave it on and it's on every bar. And so there's a level of buzz. I think we've seen, you know, usually teams like Denver and Minnesota Duluth may not have a large national name recognition because they don't have football teams at the Division I level. You know, they don't have basketball teams that are widely well known. And that's usually what you need to get more buzz. But there's no question that this is a sporting event. It's a known quantity here that where people do tune in. It might be the only college hockey game that a lot of people watch, but it's always entertaining. And I think this year, with the two teams as good as they are, I'm hoping that there will be a lot of people that tune in and enjoy it. I mean, the teams, if you don't have a team in the playoffs, or if you're out of the race, and you don't want to watch a meaningless regular season game, it makes a lot of sense to tune into this one because it's certainly got a lot to offer. And yeah, I think that, you know, college hockey in general has kind of been riding some momentum these last few years with having Jack Eichel play there, Clayton Keller this year. You know, there have been a lot of top end prospects that people want to see, and the more those guys continue to filter into college hockey, I think the more that people want to pay attention, and this game will only get bigger and better as we go on.
Chris, final question for you here. Last night, the United States women's team defeated Canada 3-2 in overtime for their fourth straight Women's World Hockey Championship. How fitting was it that Hillary Knight scored that winner in front of 3,500 fans at USA Hockey Arena, considering that she was one of those U.S. women fighting for that new deal with USA Hockey?
Yeah, you know, it had to be a leader, right? You know, those kind of players always seem to step up, and Hillary Knight is one of those players, I think, men's or women's, you just know that she thrives in those situations. And she is a real treat to watch play. I think she's got such power in her game. We saw that just absolute rocket shot that she scored to score the game winner. You know, the skills are all there for her to be one of the best, if not the best, women's hockey player in the world right now. And it was absolutely fitting to see that. You know, it was an oversold building. They had standing room only. You know, that, based on everything that happened over these last few weeks and the negotiations and how contentious things became, the big question coming in is, did that distract the women? They only had one day of practice before the tournament began. Were they going to be able to prepare? And what we saw is a team, a total team effort. I mean, as great of a player as Hillary Knight is, there were so many players that stepped up in big moments and gave that team that incredible moment of winning on home ice. It's the first time they won a world championship at home. So that's a big deal for them. And I think it was just a very fitting end to what was a highly contentious period. And I think that it gives them an opportunity now, both USA Hockey, both the women, to move on, not to forget what happened, but to move on and start preparing for the 2018 Olympics, because winning four world championships is great, but they know that the ending the streak at the Olympics with Canada having, you know, won every gold medal since 2002, there is a lot of pressure on them to get that done, especially having gotten this deal, and I think they want to make the most of it. So what an incredible event, and it was nice that happened on the the gap night between the college game, so I was able to watch it, and what a tremendous hockey game it was.
It was great to see the USA women's win last night. But, Chris, you know, you guys could let us win the Women's World Championship every once in a while, you know. Did we lose Chris?
I think he was so upset about what you're suggesting, that they would somehow allow Canada to win.
He just hung up.
He hung up. He's like, that's it. I'm done with the show.
Well, that was a great interview with Chris Peters. We've had him on the show many times, and he's been covering college hockey for many years, so we lost him a little bit there. I'll shoot him a text during the break. A big thanks to Chris for coming on the show. Let's head to break. We have one segment left. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Little Ozzy Osbourne bringing us back here. I love it. Black Sabbath for life. Final segment here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and it's brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Dave, we've got about 5 minutes here. We've got some audio from Kyle Connor from this morning about 2 hours ago, talking about getting back into the Jets lineup. He hasn't been in the Jets lineup in the game since November. So let's listen to Kyle Connor here talking about getting back into the lineup tonight against Nashville.
You've been around for a week. Were you getting impatient? Are you excited coming in tonight? How have you looked at your time up again?
Yeah, definitely excited to get a chance to go out there and prove myself again.
What do you expect coming into this one? You've got games under your belt already, so how do you handle that coming in here again tonight?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not as much nerves as a first game or per se, and for me, just looking to go out there and play the game and do what I do well.
How would you describe your season so far, Kyle, going from starting here, playing for the Moose, and coming back now?
Yeah, it's been kind of challenging and tough, you know, starting here and obviously going out on the Moose, and the last couple of weeks, I think I've been playing some pretty good hockey down there, and just trying to translate that here.
Do you feel like you grew a lot as a player by playing for the Moose?
Yeah, definitely. You know, playing a little more of an important role and playing, you know, some more minutes too. Definitely learned the style of game, the pro style, and learned about my game as well.
I guess a lot of players would say if you got that opportunity to learn in the minors and also got a taste of playing in the league this year as you did, that would be a pretty good first season.
Yeah, it's a good season.
Dave, Kyle Connor has not played a game for the Jets since November 29th against the New Jersey Devils. It's been quite some time since we've seen Connor up with the Jets. He's been with the Moose. You've seen him play a lot. And he's going to play on the fourth line tonight against Nashville with Andrew Kopp and Chris Thorburn. What are you expecting out of Kyle Connor? We only expect him to maybe play, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, but is this just nice for him to finish the season with the Jets?
Yeah, I think that's just what it is. I think it's a recognition of the fact that he had a really good season with the Moose from when he got sent down, once he got acclimatized to playing in the AHL, really being able to show off what he can do, showing off his versatility, his speed, his shot, and somewhat unheralded, his passing actually is very good too for a player who has such good shooting ability. He's actually a very good passer as well. So I think it's just recognition that he's had a very nice season with the Moose, and here's your reward is, you know, one final game with the Jets.
Dave, that's going to do it for us.
I don't know where the time went.
Yeah, well, we had a very busy show this afternoon. Thanks to all of our guests. Kenny Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun kicked it all off. Adam Vingan of the Tennessean joined us. Big thanks to him. Big thanks to Eric Comrie. Picked up his first NHL win on Thursday night. He joined us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Big thanks to Bob Duff, who joined us to talk about the final two games at Joe Louis Arena. And big thanks to Chris Peters. We lost him there at the end. Little phone miscommunication, but it was nice to have Chris on talking about the Frozen Four final tonight. Winnipeg Jets game day, the Jets and Predators, puck drop at 6 o'clock, Hustler and Lawless kick everything off at 3 o'clock, and then Rick Ralph and friends are going to be at 5 with the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show. Thanks to all of our sponsors, Bernstein's Deli, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and the Linden Market Dental Center. Thanks very much for joining us. Good afternoon and good luck.